DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
How's it going today, Adam? Man, hey, I'm doing great. We are 87 days away from the Batcat wedding as of this recording, so we don't know when this is posting yet. But as of this recording, we are less than 3 months away from the Batcat wedding on July 4th. I'm very happy about that. Yeah, man, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm doing pretty good. So it's a nice day out here today. So. That's
oh, nice.
A positive, and it's always good to record with you.
Likewise, man. It doesn't happen that often up there in Canada, does it? A nice day.
Well, no, it does. But the problem is we've had some weird weather this past week. So the fact that the sun is shining is a positive.
Absolutely. You're living in Metropolis rather than Gotham today.
Well, yeah. Today, last week was kind of Gotham when Mr. Freeze hits, and
that's a very apt comparison given our episode today.
Yeah, we held this off as much as I humanly possibly could, but it's time to do it. We are doing a review of the fourth Batman film in the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Quadrilogy.
Anyway, it's Batman and Robin, 1997. This is my personal kryptonite, but we'll get into that in a bit. To do this, we actually brought a guest on. Shocking, somebody actually wanted to join us for this one, but we're glad she did. But I'll hand it over to you, Jordan, to introduce our guest since you put this in motion. So go ahead.
Yeah, joining us today is Brittany Monet from the DCTV Classics podcast and the Black Lightning podcast. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk about Batman and Robin.
Awesome. I love the movie. We're glad to have you. And I'm glad that we were able to find somebody who does actually enjoy this movie. That should help balance out Adam here. But before we get into
well,
it,
well, you kind of somewhat enjoy this.
I do. I feel like I'm going to be in the middle between you two. I'll be sort of the I don't want to say the mediator here, but
well, no, listen. I watched it last night, and it'll shock you, but I have some positive things to say. So there's that.
Well, that's good, Adam. That's good.
and much to my chagrin, I was not drunk kind of knocked out by cold medication. I was actually lucid when I watched this movie. So
oh yeah, I was gonna ask you. You feeling better, Adam?
Getting there. A lot better than I was last week. So that's
glad to hear.
That's a plus. But enough about
did you try? Did you try Alfred's soup from Heart of Ice?
I tried to get him to make me some of that, but he wasn't having it. So he's knee deep in wedding preparation. So there's.
That is true. I like that reference, Adam.
I was out of luck, but Brittany, we always ask our guests since we're doing a Batman related episode. I want to ask you. Who is your favorite live-action Batman, and what is your favorite live-action Batman movie?
Favorite live-action Batman. I feel like everyone says this, but probably Michael Keaton.
That's a good choice. Not everybody says that, but more people should. So good choice. And in terms of movies, live-action movies, which is your favorite?
It's really tough, but I think because of Poison Ivy is always such a win for me. I'm sorry. It's Batman and Robin.
Okay, it's your choice. I can't.
Wow.
No, I know. People are okay. gonna be like, "Who is this girl? Like, oh, she her opinions don't matter."
No, everybody's
opinion. I mean, you're on the Batman and Robin episode, so that's actually kind of it's fitting.
Everybody's opinions matter, even if I personally don't happen to agree with them. But...
Well, I just think because my favorite Batman is Kevin Conroy, it's really hard for me to pick like a live action Batman and just like a live action movie that are really like, yes, that's Batman. So yeah, that's for me. It's like Kevin Conroy is Batman.
Okay, so fair enough.
Then which is your favorite of Conroy's Batman movies then? I guess is what I'd ask then.
That's tough.
Now you made it even harder for her. See.
Yeah. It's just there's so many. Oh my gosh. I probably honestly really like, I can't remember the name of it, the one with Mr. Freeze, though. I think I really like that one a lot.
Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
Sub-Zero, yes.
Yes, that was an excellent, excellent film and portrayal of Mr. Freeze.
Totally agree.
Which is the total opposite of this film. But, you know, that just came on Blu-ray, and we should review that at some point. And
I know Holy Batcast is a great review of it.
Well, listen to that one, but then we'll do our own.
And then, I was just trying to give them a shout out because they did get to it before we did.
And then, yeah, but they get to most of stuff. I mean, they started years before us, so
that's true.
Are going to get the stuff before we do. But you know, if Brittany enjoys this experience, maybe we can have her back for one of those since Kevin Conroy is her favorite Batman. But she'll let us know after the podcast if she was able to tolerate this or not, but we'll see. But I guess, I mean, Jordan, give us the wonderfully in-depth IMDb description of this.
Oh, yeah, I did have one more question for Brittany before we move on.
Go ahead.
I know you've talked about on your show, Brittany, about your Smallville watch, so you're watching it for the first time. So I was curious where you are in the show right now. I'm a huge Smallville fan, so anytime I can throw in a little bit of Smallville talk, I love to do so, just like Keith on your show. So I was curious how that's going.
I'm still kind of around where the second version of Kara has showed up now.
Okay, Laura, nice. Laura season Vanderbilt. 7.
Season 7
is my second favorite season of the show, so that's awesome.
Yeah, I just, like, I have to update my card information on my Hulu, so that's not letting me, like, watch anything right now. So I should probably do that after this podcast recording, so then I can get back into Smallville.
Now, Brittany, question for you. Since Jordan brought us into the Smallville realm of things, and since your opinion is clearly divergent, at least from the fact that you like this movie, from mine. Maybe you'll side with Jordan. I don't know. I hope not. But do you remember the episode of Smallville Thirst where Lana joins a vampire sorority?
Oh, yes. We talk about that episode kind of too much, I think, on our podcast.
Okay. Do you enjoy that episode?
I do. It's funny. Yes. It's very campy.
Okay, like, but you'll admit that it's not... You enjoy the campiness, but you can admit that it's not, like, good, like, quality-wise, right?
Yeah, like, I feel like there's a difference between something being, like, a complete masterpiece of, like, writing or acting, directing, and then there's things that are just, like, campy and fun and something to met, you know, to, like, kind of make you zone out for a little bit and relax and be in a good place. Like, you know what I mean? I think there's a difference between
that.
I can roll with that, Brittany, because, listen, the reason Adam brings that up is because he thinks I'm crazy because I love...
No, but you generally think that's a good episode.
Well, here's the thing. I do think it's a good episode. I'm not going to say... I would never say that it's, like, one of the deepest episodes of Smallville or anything. But I think, like, this is what I always say. It's one of the most purely entertaining hours of television I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, that episode, I just think, is so much fun.
You need to,
like,
watch more TV, is my...
But, I agree. I think there's some things that can be just fun, and then some things that make you really think about things and very serious and might make you cry or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you need a little bit of everything and when you're watching a show.
Fair enough. All right, Jordan, give us the usually in depth, and I say that lightly, IMDb description of this film.
All right, are we thinking one sentence or two sentences, Adam?
Oh, I'm gonna go. I mean, if they came up with more than one sentence for this, then they're in the bizarre world.
Yeah. All right, you're right. You're right. It's one sentence. Batman and Robin try to keep their relationship together, even as they must stop Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy from freezing Gotham City. Directed, of course, by Joel Schumacher and written by Akiva Goldsman.
All right. Okay, look, I'll start by saying my initial expectation going into this film was the fact that I was really excited. I loved the first two installments of this franchise. And I actually enjoyed Batman Forever. So I was looking forward to this. I thought when they announced that George Clooney was taking over, I thought that he would make a good Batman, a very good Batman. I had enjoyed Chris O'Donnell from his previous iteration. I kind of had a post-Clueless crush on Alicia Silverstone back in the day. So that was, you know, the fact that she was Batgirl was cool. Uma Thurman had a, you know, just was, seemed like a really strong choice just on paper as Poison Ivy. So I was down for that. And, you know, the inclusion of Bane, who was, you know, really prominent around that time because of the whole Nightfall kind of saga thing going on in the comics. I was really excited about this film. And that's where my headspace was going in. Let's talk about you guys. Jordan, you didn't see this in theaters.
I did not. Correct? It came out the year before I was born, so I did not see it.
So what was your, like, you come into it with all
negativity?
You come in with all the facts in hand, knowing what you're gonna get, what this is, what this isn't. What was your expectation before watching?
I watched this all the time as a kid, so I can't even remember the first time I did see this movie. But growing up as a kid, I enjoyed this movie. I never loved it. It was never one of my favorites, but I enjoyed it. And even today, I enjoy this movie more than most people. I'll admit that I do. It's far from one of my favorite live action Batman movies. In fact, it's very close to the bottom of my list. But there's a lot that I'll never say it's a good movie. And you know, overall, I have a lot of issues with it. But there's enough gems in there that I'm able to still enjoy it when I watch it. Like there's enough isolated things that I'm able to pull out and say, you know, that was really good, this was really good, that I'm able to take out from this film that sort of despite all the negatives, despite that the campiness, it doesn't appeal to me in this particular instance. And I understand what they were going for. Like I'm able to see it from that perspective. As you know, Adam, I'm not a fan of Batman 66 or sort of the Silver Age campiness in the comics. But so to me, I've always sort of justified Batman and Robin in that, you know, they were taking inspiration from Batman 66. They were taking inspiration from Silver Age comics. But that's not, you know, that's not my ideal version of Batman. So for me, it's like, yeah, but it's not really a good thing that they were taking inspiration from it. But I will, for people who criticize Batman and Robin, I will sort of come back at them with that. Well, yeah, there is precedent for what they were doing. They were trying to pay homage to something from the past. And I'm like, I can appreciate on that level, even though if that's not my preferred thing. But even beyond that, there are things in this movie that I do really like. So there's a lot of positives in this movie for me, nonetheless.
All right. Now, Brittany, you enjoyed this film. Did you watch it in theaters or
yes, it said it came out in 97, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was 7.
Okay.
I was 7 when it came out, and for me, from seeing, you know, Poison Ivy on Batman the Animated Series, like I instantly liked her character, because around that age I was very much into like flowers and nature.
Yeah.
Okay. So that to me is just seeing her on screen. I don't know. It was, I think it was one of the first moments where I kind of finally kind of saw a part of myself on TV or on the screen, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Then you have, you know, you also have two female characters in the film that in their own right kind of kick butt and they're awesome. So for me, I think it was just a huge thing as like a 7-year-old girl, like seeing two powerful women on screen.
Now,
I don't know.
Now, was this your first Batman film that you saw in theaters or did you see Forever before that?
I think,
do you remember even seeing Forever?
I don't remember seeing Forever in theaters, but I do for sure remember Batman and Robin and getting the Poison Ivy action figures that they sold with the movie.
Okay. Complete with Bane. But not really.
I think the one I got was just Poison Ivy, but it had like, it came with like vines and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Cool. I know that somebody else brought this up, so this is not my original idea, but she does have that line where in the movie, which is like every Poison Ivy action figure comes complete with Bane, and it's like, wouldn't it have been a great tie-in though if that was really true, that all the Poison Ivy action figures came with Bane as well, like as a tie-in to that line in the movie?
It would have definitely, but I think me at that age, I would have been like, I don't care about him, I just want a Poison Ivy.
and I can understand your perspective coming from the fact that, you know, as a 7-year-old girl, you saw this and there were two strong, you know, female characters doing their thing in this movie. So from that, I can see your perspective for sure. But you say, Jordan, that you, whenever somebody criticizes this film, you throw out the, well, Batman 66 did it.
Yeah.
Here's one of my big issues with this film and where that comparison goes. I enjoyed Batman 66. I grew up as a kid, well, not watching the originals because I'm not that old. But, you know, I watched it in reruns. And so I grew up with that iteration of Batman. And I, you know, if people listen to this podcast, they'll see the differing opinions that Jordan and I have in regards to the Batman 66 animated films. I can put myself in that headspace when I'm watching Batman 66 and say, okay, this is the Batman they were presenting. This is the tone of the show. One of my biggest issues with Batman and Robin is that it asks you to presuppose that this is the same Batman as Michael Keaton's Batman, which we saw in Batman Returns. I can't fathom that Batman, as presented there, could morph into what George Clooney was asked to do here. Like even Batman Forever, which had some level of campiness and had, you know, the occasional nod with the holy rusted metal line or whatever the hell Robin says. There was still a level of darkness and like Joel Schumacher was actively trying to make a movie with that film. And there was, you know, with the whole subplot about the dreams and seeing his parents' death and the red book and all that, there was still a level of darkness that we'd come to assume with the iteration of Batman that Tim Burton set up in those first two films.
There is in this movie too, with the flashbacks between him and Alfred, and
which are the best parts to me. Is the stuff between Bruce and Alfred is the stuff I really love about this film.
I agree that it's the best stuff, but this is where you and I really diverge, because I think that this movie is slightly better than Forever.
Okay, but my point is, I personally, this is where like had they come out and said, Joel, like when they made the transition between Burton and Schumacher, okay, and come out and made it clear that, okay, this is a separate entity. It's not Michael Keaton's, you know, it's not the same world. It's not the same whatever. And presented me with this 1966 knockoff, then I probably would have enjoyed it more.
You see, this was in a day and age before reboots were commonplace, though.
But what is that before it was commonplace? What does that matter? Like they had ample time where people were dissatisfied with Batman Returns because of the, you know, wasn't kid friendly, wasn't whatever, right? Or the, you know, parent groups got freaked out because Penguin was spewing some black goo that I still don't know what it is out of his mouth and all that jazz. But so to me, it's the fact that it was you retain Michael Goh, you retain that ridiculous Commissioner Gordon in this film, and it's supposed to be the same Batman. And I can't, like I said, if Batman Forever and Batman and Robin were their own separate beasts, where it was just look, we're taking this and it's a homage to 66 and it has nothing to do with Michael Keaton's iteration. I probably wouldn't hate this film as much as I do. But it's that connectivity and the fact that I have to believe that this is the same world and the same Batman. It's part of the reason I can't get my head around that.
Here's a question, Adam. Can you, and you might have talked about this on a Forever podcast, but can you imagine that Val Kilmer's Batman is the same as Michael Keaton's? First of all, and you can.
Yeah.
You see, I don't understand that. But can you wrap your head around the fact that George Clooney's Batman is the same as Val Kilmer's Batman?
No, it's like he even took it for even in a more ridiculous direction, a more campy direction. Like what happened was, to me, Joel Schumacher went, he tripled down on the campiness and the cheese and the jokes and the one-liners, and it's not like Zack Snyder doubling down from Man of Steel to BVS. This is like tripling or quadrupling down.
It's the same, Adam. It's the same. That stuff was in Forever too.
For me, it is. You could say it's not, but for me, it is. And that's why I can't accept that it's the same. It's the same continuity. Having said that, there are quite a few things that I do enjoy about this film. The opening segment where the Warner Brothers logo turns into the Bat logo and then it has the frost effect.
That was cool.
Thing happening. I really do like that. That was a cool opening. And actually, both of Schumacher's openings where the Warner Brothers logo morphs into the Bat logo, I thought were cool. I like pretty much everything to do with Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. I thought she was fantastic in the role. Her motivations reminded me of what I saw in the animated series, as Brittany had alluded to. I connected with that aspect of it. And she balanced that, what's the word we're getting? The sexual flirtation with the ruthlessness, I think is the word I'm looking for. That was all balanced quite well. And she looked fantastic, and you know, her costume was one of the few that in this movie that I'm like, all right, that works. Which one?
It changed like three or four times.
the main one.
My favorite of her costume was definitely the one in the gala with the when she steps out of the monkey suit. That costume is very similar to what she's wearing, sort of her more traditional costume, like what she's wearing in the comics now, I think. Sort of similar to her Batman Animated Series costume. That was my favorite. Like, there was later on at the end of the movie, she's wearing a red one that was really weird.
Even the whole thing about, yeah, the red one was kind of, but at that point, like, look, her performance was one of the bright spots
Oh yeah, I agree with you, and I know Brittany. I know Brittany definitely agrees with you there.
Yeah. So for her, that to me, the fact that she wore that red thing, it didn't dissuade at all. and even her like the whole thing with Nora Freeze and the way she disconnects that and tries to she disconnects the cryogenic freezing chamber. And the way she tries to play it off that it was Batman and Robin that were the culprits of that, I thought that was very much true to the character as well.
You see, that's something, Adam, with Poison Ivy, that's something that gives Batman and Robin an edge over Forever to me. Forever has two awful villains with Two-Face and Riddler. Batman and Robin have one good villain.
Well, yeah, that's okay. I'll concede that point.
That gives it a huge boost. That's really important though, Adam. That gives it a huge boost.
No, it doesn't give it. It doesn't give it. The rest of the film doesn't give it enough for me personally, but for my standards. But if it does it for you, that's cool. But she was cool. She was good. I really enjoyed her. There were moments of Mr. Freeze that I enjoyed. It was basically the backstory. His whole backstory I thought was pretty much on point and true to the incarnation that I enjoy best, which is the animated series. I liked there was a scene where he's watching the footage.
His wedding footage.
Of his wedding. Like after that whole stupid thing about singing along with the Christmas curtain. I mean that shit was stupid. But after that, when he's watching the wedding footage, and you can see he's getting emotional. And then there was later in the film when he thinks she died, and he has the tear rolling down, and it freezes. That was a great moment, and it showed some emotion in this film.
And I would say when he carves out the ice sculpture of Nora and makes the snow globe like the one in Heart of Ice.
Yeah. and he's having like a conversation with it. I thought those scenes were all excellent with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. And even I'll even say the one pun that I could stomach. That came out of his mouth was the one at the end where he gives Batman the antidote for the McGregor syndrome. And then he says, "What do you say? Take two of these and call me in the morning."
That's where you lose me, Adam.
That was the one pun where I actually laughed and sort of I'm like,
right, you're not supposed to laugh there. That's supposed to be an emotional scene where he's getting this redemption, where he's helping Alfred, and they make that stupid joke.
There were 3,000 stupid puns before that.
Well, yes, and I agree with you. This is something I agree that was awful in the movie. All those ice puns are awful. But then to have one of what's supposed to be like the emotional climax of the movie and his redemption, and then that the rest of that scene's great, where Batman tells him like, you know, you can actually, it's a lot, something like it's easy to do harm to others, but to save a life, that, you know, he says something like that's what really is difficult, and that's what really matters. So you know, whatever he's saying to Mr. Freeze, and it's supposed to be this really emotional moment, and then they still can't help themselves from having a stupid ass ice pun at the end of the scene. I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it was the whole doctor thing. I just, for whatever reason, I got a chuckle out of that one. But but largely his redemption moment I enjoyed too. Those were the parts, you know, with Mr. Freeze that I enjoyed, where there was some semblance of seriousness and acting involved from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then with Bruce Wayne and Batman, I've said it before, I love the parts with Alfred and the flashbacks where, you know, you see Alfred reading him a story, when he falls, when he's running in the hall and Alfred picks him up, and that whole conversation about, Alfred trying to tell him that, you know, no matter what you do, you know, your efforts as Batman, you can't cheat death, or however the line was phrased.
For what is Batman if not an effort to stop the forces of death or something like that?
Yeah, that's a
question for both of you guys, actually. Retrospectively, mm-hmm. that flashback where Bruce falls and Alfred picks him up, do you think of Batman Begins, the why do we fall thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, this is great. It reminds me of that. Yeah. And, oh, yeah, there's a better film after this, which I get to look forward to. So, yeah, those are the things I think of as I'm watching. Yeah. But no, because they do that one scene, and then, like, you know, 3 seconds later, it's followed by ridiculousness. But, you know, those moments with Alfred, I really love. And the thing is, it gives you little bits of connection to their history over the previous three films. Which I enjoyed.
It really helps that Michael Goff came back for all four of the films, because, like, you really, as he's dying in this film, you really do feel for him, because you've seen him over these course these four films, and he's fantastic in all four films, and it's like, it really is emotional seeing him in this film.
So all of that, I personally, all of the Alfred stuff, I personally loved, except, you know, the I'll cancel the pizza thing. Yeah, really. I mean,
Hold on a second.
I didn't say I like that. I'll get drive-through line. I never said I like that line. You're confusing. You're assuming I like that line. I didn't say I like that line.
You like that movie better. I
do like that movie. Sure, there are the same ridiculous puns, but it's amplified double time in this movie, largely because of Mr. Freeze. But I'm trying to get through the things I like, and you're making me go to the crap that I don't like. Let me give this a pause while I can. Robin/Nightwing is largely in my negative, so I won't even talk about him yet. I'll even say that the alteration of Batgirl as Alfred's niece makes sense in the context of this film universe, and I'll tell you why. Because Commissioner Gordon is an absolute buffoon. He's absolutely useless, and he's about 95 years old. So to fathom that he'd be the daughter of the woman that becomes Batgirl. It's a little far-flung for me. So I was okay with that change. And to be honest,
you're right, Adam. It is very far-flung that he'd be the daughter of the woman who becomes Batgirl.
Oh, sorry. The father. Or that she'd be... No, what I meant was that she'd be... listen, if they had done that, it would have been better than what they actually did with him throughout the course of these four films. Talk about a waste. I mean, I'm glad he got paid, and I hope it was a lot of money, but because he did nothing in all four films, absolutely nothing. So I'm okay with that change, and I kind of have to be, because if I say I was okay with the change of the Joker killing Bruce Wayne's parents, and then criticize this for changing that, I'd be far more of a hypocrite than I like to think I am. So I will go with that. I will let it go. To me, the whole motorcycle little subplot or little, it's not even a subplot. It's so minimal. You can't even count it as a plot, but that whole interlude with the whole motorcycle racing, it was, that aspect of it was pointless, but the idea that they're trying to go for, that, here you have this studious, the veneer of a studious individual, and then, you know, beyond that, she has a whole other life where she's more adventurous. It's a nod. It's basically a callback to basically, you know, again, Batman 66, but and even the comics to a degree, where, you know, Barbara Gordon is thought of as more studious and down to earth and you know, play it safe, and then she goes out and does this. So that was a callback to the characters personality that, you know, we'd come to know in previous iterations. So, you know, that aspect of it I was okay with. But, yeah, in terms of my life, and there were moments as Batman where George Clooney, like the part where he sort of leaps towards Mr. Freeze and like, to take him down, and you know the cape is fully fully extended, you know, fully open, and he's like descending and swooping down. That was a cool shot. I really liked that shot. The fact that you actually see Batman and Robin pulling off some fighting moves, like the choreography, I thought was decent in terms of their fighting, even though it was filled with goofy sound effects and all that stuff. So I was okay with the choreography. And look, even even aside from the over exposure and the obvious focusing in on of nipples on the costume, I thought aside from that, if you take away the nipple focus, I was okay with the costume.
Which costume though?
Well, I even look the one at the end where they somehow change for no apparent reason, and they all have these silver lining, these costumes with silver lined symbols. It made no sense, but I was even okay with that change.
Well, yeah, I love those. I actually love those silver costumes for the most part. I think the Batman one has a little bit too much of the silver plating, but my justification for it in the film, though, is that they've got some sort of thermal enhancements that make
Here's my question. When they were writing that quote-unquote script, could somebody not have thrown a line in there just alluding to that? Because all it looks like is, we've got work to do, and then the next time you see them, it's like, hey, look what we're wearing.
And with those suits, we actually got to see Batgirl wear the full cowl.
By the way, I will say, when she was wearing the full helmet cowl, I loved that part. Because it looked like it was Batgirl proper, if you will. And look, Robin's Nightwing, because I'm going to call it what it is, Robin's Nightwing costume looks a lot like the New 52 version of Nightwing.
It's thick. I love that. With the exception of the nipples,
minus the nipples, which.
Now, question for both of you, because this is something that somebody brought up on the Batman on Film Facebook group actually very recently that I had never noticed before. Yeah. Did you guys notice that Mr. Freeze has nipples on his suit too?
Oh yeah, everybody's got nipples. It's like a nipple fest.
I didn't notice that. Now I have to rewatch.
There's more nipples visible here than there is in the porn parody version of this movie, and I haven't watched it because more of this movie I can't take. But I'm assuming, just going on assumption, there's probably more nipple exposure here than there would be in the porn parody. I'll just come out and say it. I've run through the things that I like about this film. I really did try, folks. I'm trying here.
That was a valiant effort, Adam.
So I'm going to pass it over to Brittany, and I want her to tell us some of the things and key in on some of the things that she liked.
Well, as I said earlier, obviously, Poison Ivy, Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, is I think one of the most like dynamic performances from those what do you call it, quadrant of films or quadruple? I don't know.
Quadrology. What did you? How did you?
Quadrology.
Yeah.
Quadrilogy.
Quadrilogy. Whatever.
Quadrilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like she's one of the more, and maybe just because I'm like I was a little girl and I'm like, that's a girl. She's a villain. That I just feel like she gave one of the more like dynamic and more powerful but also still grounded performances as a villain. Like, I don't know, Uma Thurman just has something about her that's always usually like very on point.
Yeah, in a film with a lot of overacting in cases, I thought she was pretty solid throughout.
Yeah, I feel like she's the most grounded actor this movie. And that's why I feel like anytime I think about that movie, she's the first thing I think about, not like all the other mishaps or weird possibilities and things, she's always the first thing I think about because I just love her performance so much. And I also obviously Alicia Silverstone as a Batgirl, but yeah, I do think it would have been weird if they kept honoring her being like Commissioner Gordon's daughter.
Yeah.
It's been very odd, like you said, because he did nothing. He was very old, and it just would have been really awkward to explain that. And then I feel like with what they were trying to do with this movie, I feel like they were just trying to draw in more kids.
And yeah, they were definitely probably trying to. I think Joel Schumacher said it, that they wanted to get more female viewers. And so Poison Ivy and Batgirl made sense. And so, yeah, that's what they were. That was their goal.
And I feel like in general, just catering to kids more with the over puns and everything about the over topness and the campiness of it was definitely more trying to appeal to kids, because I think there's this mindset that people have that the superhero genre is more for kids anyways. So they were probably trying to hop on that. Oh, more for kids. They're the ones who are more likely to play with toys. So I think that's where this movie is kind of like a jumbled mess for some people, is because of that. I think they were trying to put too much. They were trying to appeal to kids, but they're also trying to appeal to adults. And then they kept overdoing stuff. That's how I feel like why this movie is a mess for people.
I mean, Batman Returns got so much backlash from parents and stuff. Like, there were stories of parents taking their kids out of theaters in that movie. The Happy Meal toy line, I believe, got canceled. And then of course, it didn't perform as well at the box office as Batman 89 did. So that's why we saw the transition we did with Joel Schumacher coming on board, first with Forever and then with Batman and Robin. So it was definitely a direct response to the darkness of what came before it. I would definitely agree there.
Yeah, so I just think this movie is very, like we said, is very much just trying to appeal to kids on the lighter side of things. And I can see why it doesn't flow and some people don't necessarily like a lighter Batman, which I understand. But I like Adam said, I do actually enjoy some of Batman 66, or from what I've seen of it. And then, yeah, George Clooney was a very good-looking Batman, but I don't think the strong, like, in terms of like acting, he wasn't the strongest Batman.
And I will say, he was a great as Bruce Wayne again, you know.
Yeah, he's very good at being like, I think, handsome and debonair. So yes,
the Playboy billionaire. It's not much of a stretch for him to play. Yeah,
Bruce Wayne, yeah, I would agree with his Batman is pretty awful, but his Bruce Wayne is actually excellent. Like his scenes. I mean, all his scenes with Alfred are excellent. Like his line always kills me when he says when he's with Alfred at his bedside and he's like, "I love you, old man," and like all of that. He really killed it in those scenes.
And I think, let me get your opinion on actually both of you. I think with a script that actually is trying to make a legitimate movie and not a toy commercial. I think George Clooney had the potential to be a great Batman if given the right material.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think with a lot of actors who have been in previous just not so well superhero franchises, if they had been given better scripts, they probably would have done a lot better. Because, like, yes, obviously as actors, we have to still be good, and we do. But at the same time, you also need to have good writing, because if you don't have good writing, it's, you know, not everyone can act their way out of bad writing.
Right, like I've always said, and I think I've said it to Jordan, and you know, even if you gave this exact script to Christian Bale, I would still not be good.
Yeah.
Like, there's only so much an actor can do with the material they're given. At least from my perspective, who's done zero acting, so I'll just describe it. Yeah.
I mean, Clooney's a phenomenal actor. It's just like, I think a lot of his, and like, I think one of the reasons the Bruce Wayne scenes are so strong is because those are actually really well written scenes. And yeah. I mean, here's the thing: Akiva Goldsman wrote A Beautiful Mind. The dude's a good writer, and you can see it come through in some of those scenes. And this is why I always say that I don't blame Joel Schumacher for these films. I blame WB. Joel Schumacher was brought in as a yes man for these movies. He was brought in to basically come in, and when WB told him to lighten things up, he was supposed to say yes. And that's the same goes with Akiva Goldsman writing the script. So it's like, then when you get to the Batman stuff and it gets super campy, and hi, freeze, I'm Batman, and nice buds, all that crap. It's like nobody's.
Oh God!
Did I kill you there, Adam?
Yeah, well, it's a combination of you and the leftover cold, but yeah.
So some of that stuff, no actor. I mean, I can't imagine any. Like you were saying with Christian Bale, even he, as phenomenal an actor as he is, and as phenomenal a Batman as he was, I don't think he could have made that stuff sound good. So it's like George Clooney. I feel like if he had gotten a script that actually wrote. Because you saw what he was able to do with the Bruce Wayne stuff. And the dude's a phenomenal actor. Like, he's done some really great work in his career. And it's like, I feel like if they had given him much meatier, more emotional stuff to do as Batman, more, I feel like he could have pulled it off, definitely.
Yeah. So, Brittany, continue. You were talking, you were, before I asked the question, you were talking about Bruce, George Clooney. Go on, continue with your likes.
It's fine. Yeah. And obviously, Alfred is always, like, was one of the constants, as you said, throughout all of the films. He's so good, and it's so sad when he's, you know, dying. Gosh. I was like the person, like, when I was younger, I would not cry in movies regardless of how sad something was. So the fact that movie, when I was, like, 7, made me, like, tear up. I was like, they did something right there. I think what Titanic came out the year after, and I was like the person who kind of laughed at the parts that were not supposed to be laughed at. So,
well, I laughed at it. I'm like, you guys went to watch 3 hours of this?
I like that movie.
The ship hits the iceberg and it sinks. I mean, why would you need 3 hours? I'll never know, but yeah, continue.
It's a good movie. If something's good, I don't. Look, it's, the duration
it's 3 hours, doesn't bother me. It's 3 hours, I'll never get back. But
You like me, you like Batman v Superman, the Ultimate Edition. That's 3 hours.
Yeah, but in this case, it was a movie that the other one was a movie I didn't like. So
Well, that's fine. You didn't like it. I like that movie, and so I say that the 3 hours it's justified. Right,
fair enough. Why are we talking about? Why am I getting into an extended talk about Titanic? Let Brittany continue her thoughts.
It's a better movie than this is, in my opinion.
Well, but that's like saying, come on, would you rather have the chicken pox or
it's like saying that, but I'm saying that I actually enjoy this movie somewhat. So that's actually, for me, that's saying something. It's not saying that much, but it's saying something.
Right. All right, Brittany, continue with your.
And I always enjoyed a little moment. Is it Coolio that's in that scene with Mr. Yes, Freeze?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I always enjoyed that moment. I always thought it was funny. And yeah, just the ice puns. Oh my gosh, there's so many.
That's something you like, or you?
It's because it's so cheesy that like I enjoy it. I'm that person who like sometimes something is really campy that I'm like, this is amazing. But I don't know. I'm cool with campiness. Like as long as I know that's what you're trying to be is like be campy. But yeah, I know, oh God, there's so much things about this movie that I enjoy too much than I probably should. yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anything else.
All right, Jordan, we'll throw it over to you. And then if Brittany comes up with anything else, you can chime in. What are some of the things that you enjoyed?
Yeah, well, you guys have brought up a lot of them. Okay. I'll start out with something that the parts of Mr. Freeze I do like, which is most of the scenes that you were pointing out, Adam. All the scenes with just the fact that they did take the Heart of Ice origin, and all the scenes with him reflecting upon Nora, the scene of him watching. Really, the one that really stands out to me is the one of him watching their wedding footage. I think that's a really sweet, emotional scene. So I love all of that stuff. I just wish that it gets overshadowed a lot by his performance, but the scenes themselves, those particular scenes are quite good. Clooney is a great Bruce Wayne. I don't like him as Batman, but he's a great Bruce Wayne in this movie, and he has some really emotional stuff. Michael Goff returning as Alfred again. I love him. Their scenes together. That line that Alfred has is honestly one of the best Alfred lines ever. The one about, for what is Batman if not an effort to control death or whatever he says. That stuff's great. And I've complained a lot about Chris O'Donnell in Batman Forever and the fact that Batman essentially adopted an adult in that movie. But in this movie, because it's not focusing on his first day, his early days as Robin, I actually like him a lot more in this movie because it's focusing. I mean, I can just sort of imagine, I can sort of pretend almost that Batman Forever didn't happen and that he didn't, and that I can almost try and put myself in the mindset that, okay, Bruce adopted him when he was younger than that. So looking at it that way, I'm able to actually enjoy Chris O'Donnell's performance in this movie quite a bit more. I mean, I didn't dislike his performance in Forever either. I like his performance in this movie for the most part. Because I'm thinking about it right now, the costumes in this movie, most of them I like. We talked about Poison Ivy's costumes. That's sort of hit or miss for me, but the one I really like is her when she steps out of the monkey suit and she's at that gala. That was a great costume. I love Dick's Nightwing. I mean, I'll call it a Nightwing costume too, Adam.
That's what it is.
He's not called Nightwing in this movie, but it is a Nightwing costume, so whatever. I love that costume. It looks great, except for the nipples. I mean, other than that, that costume is awesome. I'm not real big on Clooney's main bat suit in this movie, but all three of their ice suits are actually awesome. I think with Batman's ice suit, like I said, it is a little bit too much of the silver plating. They went overboard. Other than that, it's a cool suit, I think.
I think the Batgirl one is the best one.
Yeah, that I would agree. In terms of the ice suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. That it's a really cool suit. Yeah, I think those suits are awesome. I agree. Oh, okay. First of all, I've got to say one thing. Smallville alum, Don Glover in this movie.
Well, listen, knew it was coming at him. Listen, I think he'll take more kindly to be referred to as Smallville alum as opposed to Batman and Robin alum. I think.
Hey, well, you know, I refer to anybody, even Sean Sipos, who was only in one scene in Smallville. I still call him a Smallville alum.
Yeah.
So, but no, but John Glover, of course, he was in six seasons as a main cast member, and then more in season one, and then some more in season 10. John Glover on Smallville. What am I talking about? Lionel Luthor on Smallville, John Glover in this movie playing Jason Woodrue. He was great. Whenever I see him in the scenes in this movie, I sort of think Lionel Luthor, but I can't quite get that out of my head, him as Lionel Luthor, but that's okay because he's so phenomenal as Lionel Luthor. I like him in this movie. Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy, like I said, that's one of the big things that gives this movie a boost over Forever for me is that out of all the villains in Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, she's the best. So it's like, and it's not even close. So like, I think that Poison Ivy in this movie is really, really good. Actually, I think she gives a really good performance. I'm with you, Adam. I don't have any problem with them changing Batgirl's origin. I actually like it quite a bit. I like that she's got a little bit of a romantic thing going with Dick, because I am a Dick Bab shipper. So I like that.
I don't even want to know what the actual ship name for that is because it probably sounds ridiculous.
That's what it is.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yes, that's what it is. That's why I said it. That's what it is.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, so I like that they've got that they sort of play on that a little bit in this movie. If Batman 5 had happened, I would have imagined that maybe they would have explored that some more. But I like that. I liked basically her. I liked her origin story in this movie, basically, and the fact that they incorporated that she is a computer genius like she is in the comics. I thought that was great.
I don't know if they incorporated. I mean, it was an off mention, but yeah, they could have. I wish they would have done a little bit more.
But she's the one who figures out how to change the satellites or whatever.
Fair enough. At least they threw that line of dialogue in. Okay, I'll give them that. Which is more than I can say of the explanation for the different suits, which was just, let's go change.
Another costume I like. I like Bane's look a lot. What they did with him in this movie is awful, but his look in this movie is really, I mean, it's comics accurate. It's really cool. I like that it's a Bat Family movie. This is the only live-action Bat Family movie we have. I love that it is, that it does focus on the Bat Family. You've got Batman, you've got Robin, and you've got Batgirl in this movie. And that ending scene of them all putting their hands together and you know, vowing to work together in the future, and then running, just like in Forever, we get one of those awesome shots of Batman, Robin, and Batgirl this time running in front of the bat signal. I mean, it's awesome. I love that final shot. I think it's so cool. I actually like Elliot Goldenthal's Batman theme quite a bit. I like it in both these movies, both the Schumacher films. And it's not my favorite Batman theme, obviously. I don't like it as much as Elfman's, and I don't like it as much as Zimmer, certainly. Honestly, I don't know if Zimmer. I think Junkie XL did most of the Batman stuff in BVS. So
yeah, he did.
He did. Okay. So I don't like it as much as Junkie XL's Batman theme either, but I do like it. Elliot Goldenthal's Batman theme. So I think that's actually pretty good. I mean, I would say there's a lot in this movie that I like. That was a pretty long list, I think. So there's a lot that I really like in this movie.
All right, and now comes to the point where my dislikes. Where?
Oh boy.
Where do I begin? In short, I'll say most of everything else I didn't mention in my likes goes into my dislike categories. I don't know how you can say you like Dick Grayson in this movie. He's useless.
He's cute.
Okay, but fair enough. But he's useless. The character does nothing aside from whine at all. Poison Ivy loves me more than she does you. And, oh, I'm stuck in your shot. I want my own signal.
Well, there's something. Here's one more like, Adam, that relates to that. I love that Batman has, like, he's able to sort of, like, even, like, he has that conversation with Dick where he's, like, where he basically explains, like, yes, I can feel the effects of her toxin on me, but, like, he's self-aware enough to realize what's going on. He's able to sort of persevere through that. And I thought that was a great Batman moment.
Sure, where yeah, because like, he's got more experience than Dick does as a crime fighter, and to be able to sort of fight off that. It makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Batman, I always say that Batman has the willpower of a Green Lantern. And it's like that's really a testament to that he's able to sort of both through his intelligence and his willpower, he's able to sort of realize that and fight it off.
But aside from that, the character for me of Dick Grayson in this film does nothing but whine for 90% of the film, and the regurgitation of the line, "I want a car, chicks dig the car." It's like, why do I need to hear this again? It's like Brandon Routh saying 1,000 times, you know, it's like in Superman Returns when they regurgitated the, you are not alone, you are not one of them, but you're not alone. Like, it was 3-4 times, and then, you know, Brandon Routh, "I'm always around," you know, they regurgitated that line. It's like, okay, really? I heard it in Batman Forever. I don't need to hear that again.
That's a great line. The one you're referring to in Superman Returns. In Superman Returns.
It is, but it was overused. Like, they overused that Marlon Brando. I guess it makes sense because they had to pay $3 million for it, but it was still overused.
Well, it's beautiful, though. Here, it's a stupid line, so I'll agree with you here. But in Superman Returns, that I thought that was great, but...
Fair enough. But here was terrible to hear. It was terrible to hear the first time, and it was terrible to hear again. The whole, this is why Superman works alone, like, really... Like, you guys are in the process of killing one franchise. Must you, by association, kill the other one that at this point was already on life support because of Superman 4? So I didn't I didn't care for those. Every Mr. Freeze pun, aside from that last one that made me chuckle, was terrible. And it's, again, it just bugs me because there were scenes where I'm like, damn, Arnold Schwarzenegger could have been really great if given even a half-decent script. you know, there the plot line was, I guess, okay. Like, I get, you know, Freeze wanting to sort of freeze Gotham, and then Ivy and him being like an Adam and Eve and restarting everything. You know, upon a rewatch, that I can kind of see that making sense as to why they were working together. So I'll give that a pass. I'll put it in a slight positive, not a full positive, but it's there. But the one of the things that really bugged me in this movie was the set design. It's like the amount of giant statues in this film, like giant male statues, like it got to a ridiculous level. Like the observatory, the whole thing was held up by a statue. So imagine if there was a terrorist attack in Gotham City. I mean, if they take that statue down, I mean, it's ridiculous. What city are we living in?
I love that. With the exception of the neon, that's far too prevalent. This is something I forgot to mention in my likes. I love the sort of architecture of Gotham in this movie. I think it's so, it creates this like sort of larger than life feel and this sort of otherworldly. Like,
see, to me, it feels largely fake because 90% of it is shot on a soundstage, and you can feel that. Like, you could, for me, it's like, and then you have these giant, like, when Poison Ivy's driving on a street, or Bane's driving around on the street, the entrance to the store is essentially a giant male statue. And it's like, what city is this? What are we in? Fetish Land, USA? Like, what is this?
You see, there's this one shot, like, I think it makes for some really cool shots. There's this one shot where they're sort of panning up to the observatory, and there's this great music from Goldenthal. Like, his score really kicks in that scene, and you're sort of, you see how grand Gotham looks in that scene, and you zoom in, and it's the scene right before, I think, Bruce meets with Pamela Isley when she comes to try and confront him at the observatory. It's right before that scene, and there's this really cool shot just sort of zooming in on the observatory with the music, and I thought, you know, I like the way Gotham looks in this movie.
Personally, I thought it looked terrible, but I will say this: I did like the look of Arkham. I thought Arkham looked good. I will say that.
I'll agree. Although, why on earth did they at the end give Mr. Freeze his suit back in order to and put him in the same cell as Poison Ivy?
Wait, so you're asking me for some sense? This movie's not supposed to make sense, Jordan. That's the whole point. So him, at the end, giving the suit back, I'm like, sure, why not? Who cares? Logic has gone out the window long ago. Let's just forego that. But just, you know what? I will say this. It's a positive, but everything else following it is a negative. I did like the Batmobile in this film. I will say that. I like this Batmobile more than the Forever Batmobile. I'll give it that. Here's the problem.
I liked it. I don't love it. I don't love it, but I like it. It's okay.
Yeah, I didn't say I loved it. I said I liked it.
Okay.
But every other vehicle is nothing but a commercial for a toy. I don't know what Mr. Freeze is driving around in.
Well, the Red Bird, straight out of the comics, Adam.
Okay, Nightwing's Robin, whatever his name is, the bike is fine.
Yeah. But by the way, I'll echo your thoughts, Adam. I really like, or maybe I can't remember. Did you say you didn't like the motorcycle, or you did like the motorcycle scenes? Because I really like the motorcycle scenes personally.
I don't dislike them. They're just they're largely pointless. In the grand scheme of things, they're pointless, but I
they're cool, though.
I mean, they're cool chase scenes, sure.
Yeah.
But in the context of everything else, they're largely pointless.
And they add some suspense, like when they're flying off the giant.
What suspense? Did you actually think any of them were going to die? I didn't. It's like, of course not. Like,
no, but
here's who they should have killed off because he was useless. Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
You gotta kill somebody, kill him off, because he does nothing.
I think that, spare, like, obviously I didn't think...
This,
obviously I didn't think they were going to die, but still just seeing, anytime I see people like hanging from that sort of height or like in danger of falling from that, high, it sort of gives me like a sort of like a knee jerk reaction where I'm just like trying to figure, like, well, you know what I'm saying? Like even after I've seen this movie, you know, dozens of times, but, and like, obviously even like, obviously I know they're not going to die, but like, it still provides some suspense, I think, in that scene. I don't know.
No, I had no suspense there. and then the other thing is too, the Batmobile chases could have been cool, but everything else around it looked like a toy, and it's like I'm okay, like I found no excitement when he was chasing things around the bat, and a Batmobile chase should get me pumped up. And here it just fell flat. Which is sad. I don't know what to think of the opening scene the opening fight in the museum was a particular offense to me because I'm a huge hockey fan. Okay. And these people, the fight choreographers, the stunt actors, they all bastardized my favorite sport by having it appear in this movie filled with puns and all, like, leave. Can we just leave my look, you're already damaging my beloved my favorite character. Must you take my favorite sport with it?
I would have thought you would have loved that, Adam.
No, it's terrible.
I love I'm a basketball fan, and I love the basketball scene in Catwoman because
I rest my case.
It's like a mixture of two things that I really like.
No, it's let's take two things Adam really likes, and in one fell swoop, kill them both.
So it's like if you like ketchup and you like ice cream, and you pour ketchup on your ice cream.
Why would you do that?
Who likes ketchup? Do you like?
No, I'm saying it's like if you like ketchup on hot dogs and you like ice cream, but they don't mix because you like ketchup on one thing, but and then you like ice cream, but you like them separately, but you don't like them together. It's a good analogy, damn it.
No, your initial try at it made no sense. But anyway,
you understand what I'm saying now?
Well, sure. If you have to explain an analogy, it's not a very good one, sir. I'll just tell you that. But the hockey scenes aggravated me, like, to no end. I literally closed my eyes and just like I had to sort of not look at them because they aggravated me. I don't know what to make of the skateboarding in space thing that was happening.
Okay, that was stupid. That was really stupid. But again, provided me another. It was another really cool seeing Robin surfing on the building, and like I was like, that was another moment where I was like, it was suspense because like again, anytime I see somebody that high up that like is in danger of falling, like
so
I
you, just thought, you have a fear, but you have a fear of heights then.
I don't know. I don't think I really. I don't have like a severe fear of heights.
Right,
but like recently, I just saw a picture of Christian Bale in the scene in The Dark Knight where he goes and he gets loud. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You know what we'll do?
I saw a set photo of Christian Bale standing atop that large building, and that was the first time I had ever found out that they actually had him up there. But, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, just seeing that picture, it gave me this gut reaction of like you know, even though obviously I know Christian Bale is still alive, so I know he didn't fall off that thing, but it's still, even seeing that picture
I think you have a fear of heights.
Yeah, I want to test your fear of heights. So here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna come down to Atlanta one day in a Batman suit, and we're just gonna hang you off the edge of a building with a rope, and we're gonna see if you're afraid of heights or not.
Swear to me.
Yeah, and we'll record it for the pod. We'll do a vlog. We'll do a vlog. A DC multiverse musing vlog. We'll see if Jordan's afraid of heights. So the hockey scene was the skateboarding in space thing was to me, I don't even look. It looked, I'll say this, visually it looked exciting, but I don't know if I ever want to see Batman and or Robin / Nightwing skateboarding in space ever again. it's not something I need to see. But visually, I'll give them credit because it looked, you know, cool for 1997 technology. although, listen, between canceling the pizzas and Robin saying cowabunga, look, I love the Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to make an animated adaptation of the Batman Ninja Turtles comic book, keep the two separate. I don't want to hear any connectivity because... Again, why are you going to ruin two things that I like by having Robin and cowabunga? It's like, why? Couldn't he have said, look, as ridiculous as it would have been, couldn't he have said Surf's Up? I don't know. Of all the ridiculous things he said, that would have fit better. But, so, yeah, the whole thing, I don't know. And the excessive use of neon, it was on overload. But I don't know. It's the whole the reason why this is so aggravating for me is because there are as much as I shockingly going through this, I realized there were a lot more things that I pointed out that I enjoy than I thought I would, and what it makes me realize is that if you take away some of the excessive junk and garbage, there could have been, if their intention was to actually make a movie and not a toy commercial to sell toys to kids, there could have been something really, really good in here. But the excessive farce of it all largely takes away from it for me. Like, it could have been something on par with its predecessor, especially because Joel Schumacher is a good director, a really good director. He's done some really good movies. So had they let him go in the direction he ultimately, because he said he wanted to make it, you know, not as dark as, you know, Returns in a way, but he wanted to go darker with his movie, but because of the studio mandate, he couldn't. And he was going to go darker if he had made another one, but then the box office returns were so terrible for this one that him coming back was not an option, or they quickly fired him shortly thereafter. But had Joel Schumacher been able to make the actual movie he wanted to make, I think he had the ingredients to make a really, really good Batman movie. Unfortunately, the stuff we saw here just didn't allow for it. And that's
I agree with you, Adam. And that's why, like I was saying before, it frustrates me so much when people make fun of Joel Schumacher for these films, because it's like, first of all, the dude's a good director. He's made some really good films. And it's like, this again, he was hired as a yes man for WB. He made the film that WB wanted him to make.
And it's kind of like, basically, he's kind of like, yeah, it's not the same, but it's kind of the job that Joss Whedon was asked to do with Justice League.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree there.
So you can't, if you...
Similar situation.
If you're not a fan of Justice League, it's kind of hard to put the blame on Joss Whedon, because he was called in to do a specific job. I'll give Joel Schumacher a lot of credit. He's come out and taken the full brunt of it. He's apologized for this movie. And I give him credit for doing that. That's quite big.
I mean, it's very honorable, because basically he's apologizing for something that wasn't his fault. So, I mean, I definitely commend him for doing that. And I mean, I think that takes quite a bit of
I gotta give him respect for that, but I you know, I could go on. I mean, I could ramble on about negativity towards this thing. I'm not gonna do that. I'll let Brittany, is there anything negative that you can point out about this film that you thought?
Yeah, I also didn't really care for Commissioner Gordon. He was useless and kind of at the point where like he's a little too old maybe to be dealing with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I agree. I felt like the set was very ornate and gaudy, and the neon was definitely excessive. But also at the same time, I feel like Gotham to me always feels like it doesn't exist in Gotham should also have a unique look to it at the same time. So I feel like it's hard to pinpoint how Gotham should look. Because I also don't like the look so much of it in the Dark Knight trilogy. I feel like it's too, like, obvious New York and bland.
It's too much of a real city for you.
Yeah. So I want maybe something somewhere in between would be nice.
Like, here's my thought, and maybe you guys can chime in on it. To me, what I like about the Gotham TV show is that if you look at their Gotham when they do a certain, you know, like cityscape kind of shots, it does look like a hybrid of Burton and Nolan. And I think a middle ground between the two is where you want to be. Personally, with Gotham.
I agree that Gotham, the TV show, does find an interesting middle ground. Actually, this is something I was just thinking about in the most recent episode. The most recent episode felt a little bit different atmospherically than what we traditionally see on the show. I don't know if either of you have watched the most recent episode, but it was more brightly lit than Gotham usually is. And some of the architecture, like there was this scene with Jerome in this office building that the architecture was much more modern than we normally see on Gotham. Just something I noted. But yes, I agree. In general, Gotham is an interesting sort of blend of the two, sort of Burton's take. Or really, I shouldn't even credit Burton. It's Anton Furst who designed that Batman 89.
I just call it the Burton Gotham because it's associated with
this. Sure. No, I understand. And the Dark Knight trilogy look. Personally, though, my ideal Gotham is the Dark Knight trilogy. I love the sort of realistic, real world take that he gave us on Gotham. While still, especially in Begins, he did give some of the more gothic elements, like in The Narrows, we saw a little bit of that. But I like that it felt like a real city in the Dark Knight trilogy. That's something that really appealed to me. So personally, that's my
preference. We're all on sort of. I mean, I don't know, Brittany, have you seen Gotham?
I haven't seen it in the last couple years, but I really did like the look that they were going, where it was
unhard to... Right, would you agree with my assessment that it's kind of a middle ground between Burton and Nolan and what they try to do?
Yeah, I do think it's middle ground, and I also like that the city feels kind of timeless, like you can't really pinpoint what...
Yes.
It takes place in. I really like that a lot.
Yes. Yeah. I'd agree with that for sure. So you were talking about the set design. Is there anything else that you want to point out that you weren't a fan of?
I would have preferred to have more Poison Ivy than Mr. Freeze, honestly, I think.
Well, if it meant less puns, I'm 100% there with you.
I'd agree. When it comes, like, in general, as a villain, I like Mr. Freeze more than I like Poison Ivy. But in terms of these iterations, I like Poison Ivy much more. So I would agree with you there in that when it comes to if it's more of Arnold Schwarzenegger's punny Mr. Freeze, then yes, I would prefer more of Poison Ivy for sure.
You know what Warner Brothers needs to do? They need to get on that Gotham City Sirens movie.
They do. They really do.
And I think that'll make, you know, that'll make everybody happy, and we can just sort of, and then, you know, I don't know if they can ever do, I mean, you could do. I think there's a way to do Mr. Freeze. What's the word I'm looking for? Justice. I wouldn't be opposed of him getting another crack.
He's one of my top choices for the villain of Matt Reeves' solo film.
Yeah, no, it's the first one. It's not gonna happen with the first one. I guarantee you that. I think Matt Reeves is gonna, you know, start off a little safer than Mr. Freeze. Jordan, let's move to some of your negatives. What do you dislike about this film?
Well, there is quite a bit that I do dislike that I do dislike. Yes, I said that right.
Yes, you did.
All of the campy stuff in this movie, particularly with Mr. Freeze, bugs me. It pisses me off that they took away all the intelligence from Bane in this movie. Like,
oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot to mention Bane. Yeah, he was tense.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be this threat to Batman on both an intellectual and a physical level, and they basically stripped him of all his intelligence and just made him this goon who grunts and only he talks like Solomon Grundy in this movie is what he does.
I don't know. Look, I have no idea. I'm still trying to figure it out. What the hell they were going for with that movie, with that portrayal.
Yeah, it was like, awful. It was awful. Again, I like the look of him, but it was, yeah, that was awful.
it was like Doomsday meets Grundy meets, Mexican wrestling meets S&M, and I don't know what the hell was going on. It's like, what the, just, and the worst part is, if you guys read the Nightfall storyline in the comics, Bane is just as much intelligent as he is physically imposing.
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I agree with you.
Yeah, okay.
And to me, the Dark Knight Rises version isn't perfect, but it's a lot closer to...
It is perfect.
Yeah, well, that's a debate. That's another podcast.
It is perfect. But I agree with you. Even if we're just talking about the Nightfall version, then I agree with you there that Bane in Nightfall, I mean, his whole thing, it's very strategic what he's doing in Nightfall. So, like, and I mean, this was post-Night. Obviously, Nightfall is where, I mean, that was Bane's big introduction. So it's like, this is post that. So I wish they would have taken more inspiration from that.
And you know what's funny? They kept the South American angle because that's where Ivy and Woodrow were doing their thing.
Yeah. So
they kept the South American aspect. They kept the fact that he wears the leather wrestling mask thing. But then everything else was just like, just do what we want. And Joel Schumacher's reasoning for putting Bane in there, this is never a good reason to put a villain in a movie, is, well, my nephew liked the character. Well, big friggin' deal. Like, that's fine and dandy, but the character's gonna work. And have a purpose, and being Poison Ivy's lackey. Listen, I'll hang around with Uma Thurman whenever you want. Go get her coffee and do whatever. You know, I'll go for whatever. But in a movie, I don't know. Just to me, it's like, oh, it's Bane in name only, in my opinion. And it's terrible. But continue, Jordan.
I absolutely detest. The scene at the auction. I detest that scene.
Well, Batman has a credit card.
Oh my God. First off, and we've talked about this before. I brought it up on the show before. I hate any time Batman is like out doing any sort of public thing like that. Like, it just really irks me the wrong way. Like, the end of Justice League Origin, the comic book, where the Justice League's all standing up on the stage. You know what I'm talking about? Or Justice League War, the animated movie that happened too?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the New 52. Yeah.
I hate that scene. I want Batman to be this sort of dark, vigilante, urban myth of the night. And I hate the idea of him standing up there on a stage being, like, essentially like commemorated with the Justice League. So I hate it there. I hate it here in this movie, him standing up. And I don't care that his plan was that he was trying to catch Mr. Freeze. The fact that he's standing there in front of a huge crowd, like essentially standing there for photos, it irks me to no end, that scene. I think it's awful. And then, as Brittany pointed out, the infamous Bat credit card. Oh, my God. I just – it's awful.
I have so many questions about that.
What do you mean?
Like, how was Batman able to actually get a functioning credit card and, like, you know, approve?
Yeah, how do you sign up for one
this
of those?
Is Batman. Like, how do you get a credit card for your, like, superhero identity? Like, how does that work?
It makes sense.
Well, if we're going with the idea that he's, like, which essentially this movie is, where he's, like, I mean, they don't say it in this movie like they do in Batman 66, but like he's a duly deputized officer of the law. Maybe his actions are sanctioned. Like, that's my whole problem with this, is it's like he's no longer, you take away the vigilante aspect of him, and he's like no longer this. I mean, essentially, he's a sanctioned crime fighter, essentially, and it's just weird to me. So I don't know. But I mean, as Adam pointed out, nothing in this movie is logical. I mean, there's the whole thing with Mr. Freeze at the end where he's got his suit and arm.
And the worst thing about the credit card is you actually hear cha-ching, and it's like, why? Why am I hearing this?
It's so stupid. That whole thing is awful. It's awful. I hate that scene. I really do. Let me think. What else do I really detest in this movie? I don't like. Oh, Gordon. Brittany brought up Gordon.
We all brought it. We all talked about.
Oh yeah, you brought him up too. He's a buffoon in this movie, and like I don't blame Pat Hingle really, but they just no. The way they wrote Gordon in these movies is just. They wrote him as a buffoon, and thank God.
At least he wasn't wearing slippers in a role in this one.
That's true. Hey, well, again, one more thing that this movie has on Batman Forever.
Well, that's not saying much.
Oh, sure. Everything with him was ridiculous. Thank God Gary Oldman came and made everything okay in the Dark Knight trilogy. But yeah, that was awful. The neon was completely over the top in this movie. I didn't like that at all. There's probably some other stuff that I'm not thinking of right now. Personally, and I'm with Adam on this, the opening scene is just completely ludicrous with the bat skates and everything. I mean, it's not the idea of the bat skate so much that bothers me. It's just that scene is just so goofy, and it's just I really don't care for that scene at all. This movie is just, it's so campy. There's a lot of issues with this movie. I think I'm gonna leave it there.
All right, fair enough. I guess it comes that time where we have to actually give this thing a letter grade. So I'm going to give it to our guest, the positive one of the group, Brittany. What letter grade would you give this movie?
If we're going just based on Uma Thurman alone, I would say an A+. But with the whole thing in its entirety, maybe like a C-.
Jordan.
Okay, I'm going to give this movie, I think I'm going to give it a, you see, I gave Batman Forever a C+, and I like this movie slightly better than Batman Forever, but I'm still not sure that it quite cracks a B- for me, so I think I'm going to, I thought of one more dislike in this movie, actually.
The way you said that, so excitedly, but go ahead, yeah.
Julie Madison in this movie. Actually, two more dislikes.
Oh, I like the fact that they use Julie Madison. Good on them.
No, here's the thing. You know how I am.
You just don't like her because it's not Catwoman, and that's not a valid reason to.
It is a valid reason. No, it's not. It is a valid reason. They're talking about. They're speculating about marriage in this movie. They're talking about. Listen, Bruce Wayne's true love is Selina Kyle. Period.
Stop it. It's not a valid reason to judge the movie because Catwoman wasn't the love interest.
But I will give this one more. I will give this. Here's another thing that gives this an edge over Batman Forever for me. The line that ruins Batman Forever for me. My least favorite thing about that entire movie is Bruce's line to Alfred, "I've never been in love before." When the very previous movie that was contradicted. And they completely ignored his relationship with Selina Kyle in Batman Returns. Anyway, we didn't have an awful line like that in this movie. I still don't like the idea of bringing in Julie Madison. They should have brought back Selina Kyle. They should have brought back Michelle Pfeiffer.
Wait a minute. You want Catwoman in this travesty? Really?
Yes. She would have made it better. Yes.
If yes. you enjoy the character of Selina Kyle, you're thanking your lucky stars that she's as far away from this thing as possible.
Well, in any case, I've got one more complaint, which is the Donna Smoke of the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy, which is Gossip Gertie.
Yeah, that's.
She is one of the most annoying movie characters of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you that.
So I can't stand Gossip Gertie, and she ties into the whole Julie Madison thing where she's asking them, so what about marriage? And she's really annoying.
All right, so your grade is?
I'm going to – I like I said, I like it slightly better than Forever, but I don't think it quite warrants getting the minus range. So I'm going to give it a C+. All
right, and I'm just going to counter by saying I enjoy the fact that they chose Julie Madison. Good on them for acknowledging history and continuity. One of the rare times that that they took the time to actually – worry about anything like that. I like Bruce Wayne. I prescribe to Bruce Wayne's theory that he's not marriage material, in my opinion. But that's neither here nor there.
Wait, what do you mean Bruce Wayne's theory? He's engaged right now, Adam.
In the comic books, but I disagree with that, and I don't think it's going to last that long. That's where we differ. You're hanging your hat on this marriage. I don't think it's going to last longer than Tom King's on the book. So
that's still a really long time. That's at least two more years.
That's not what we're here to discuss.
At least 2 more years. You don't want to discuss it, then you probably shouldn't have brought it up.
I happen to agree with Bruce Wayne in that aspect of it.
What do you mean you agree with Bruce Wayne? How can you possibly agree with Bruce Wayne when Bruce Wayne, in the source material, let's not forget, in the source material, is currently wearing an engagement ring, Adam?
Right now, sure. But like everything else in comics, it won't last. I'm telling you that. Prepare yourself. You're the one who's going to have a heart. Brittany, this guy's going to be like crying in a ball in the fetal position when they eventually do break up Batman and Catwoman. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
As I've said before, we know it's going to – I'm completely confident it's going to last through Tom King's run, which is over 50 more issues, Adam. Right. But even if it doesn't – not even if it doesn't. What I'm trying to say is I think that even once he leaves, I should say, I'm confident that he's going to set a status quo where that's just the status – just like Alfred is part of the status quo, like Alfred's always there. I think Tom King's going to set it as part of the status quo that Bruce and Selina are always married.
You hang on to those delusions. Look, folks, everybody knows that this movie, it causes me pain. But I really did give it an attempt, and I gave some positives. I tried not to be as harsh with my negatives because I do respect the fact that our guest really enjoys this movie.
That's okay. Be honest.
Having said that, I have to be honest with my grade. And for me, it's a capital with a bold, capitalized, italicized, whatever kind of inscription you want to put on it. It's a big fat F. It just is. It's the worst iteration of Batman I've ever seen. And that's unfortunately it. I wish it was better.
Wow.
I wish I liked it better.
I thought your positives would at least get you up to a D minus.
No, I can't, because if it's if a D is somewhere between 50 to 52%, I can't. I just can't. There's too much that outweighs. There's too much that hammers it down. Just what I think, it's rising up. Something they do something to hammer it down. So, unfortunately. But I did give it a valiant effort and know that there are some things that I like about – there are some things in here that I enjoy. Look, it was interesting to rewatch for the first time in probably at least – like all the way through with the intent of watching it, probably the first time in 17 or so years.
Wow.
So it was an interesting experience. But – I just can't give this movie anymore. But I'm glad. Look, I've always said on this show, I'm glad that it enhanced someone's Batman fandom, and in this case, it was Brittany's, and I'm happy for that. So it did lead to Batman Begins. So
yes,
I'll give it credit for that.
If nothing else, yes, it did lead to, well, what I consider the three greatest live action movies ever made, which are the Dark Knight trilogy. So there's a very good chance without this movie we wouldn't have gotten that. So you got to give it that.
Right. So that's that. Brittany, we hope you had fun.
I did. Thank you for having me.
And we hope you'll consider coming back.
Of course.
We are part of the Batman Podcast Network, where you can find plenty of other Batman-related podcasts. So in terms of social media plugs, Brittany, if people want to interact with you on social media, where can they do that?
So you can find me on Twitter at Hi Brittany Monet. It's HIBRITNEYMONAE. And I also host two podcasts. I host the Black Lightning podcast, which you can follow us at BL_podcast. And I also co-host DCTV Classics with Keith Chow and a whole bunch of cool people. And if you're actually a fan of the Holy Musical Batman, the Holy Musical Batman musical, one of our co-hosts is actually Robin in that. So that's pretty cool.
And I saw you guys just posted another Smallville-related episode this morning. So I am really excited to listen in to that on DCTV Classics.
I'm not on that one because I was working when they recorded that. But yes, it's... Keith and Desiree talking about, Keith actually went to, I don't know what it was recently, but he met Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling. So
it was it was Awesome Con, because yeah, they were there this past weekend. Yeah, and our buddy Zach from Always Hold On to Smallville, who reviewed season one of Smallville with us, he was there and he got to meet them too. So I actually watched the panel. They had two panels there. They were on the General Superman panel, and then they were also Tom and Michael had their own Smallville panel. So you can watch, those are available for anybody who's interested on YouTube if you didn't get to make it to Awesome Con. And they are amazing, amazing panels. Yeah, seriously. So yeah, anyway, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Brittany, but yeah.
Oh, no, that's pretty much all the social media handles you need for me. So
follow her there, listen to the two podcasts. I love Black Lightning, so. I can't say enough good things about that.
We're loving that show. It's a lot of fun, and loving all the feedback people have been giving us about the show, about our podcast. It's been great.
So check those out. Jordan, where can people interact with you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews, so if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, it would really help us out if you'd leave us an iTunes review. We'd really appreciate it. Yeah.
And if you want to find me, you can add Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. That wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, we hope you have a great weekend and a great week ahead. So long, everyone.
Bye-bye.